Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good there, Justin. How are you?
Doing good. You're doing better than you were last week, so that's all that matters. Tonight's episode is pretty creepy, actually. It's about a guy named Charlie Brandt.
Fort Wayne, Indiana, January 3rd, 1971. Charlie Brandt was the second oldest in his family. His parents were German immigrants. And he had an older sister, Angela, a couple years older. And he had a couple of very young sisters.
Jessica and Melanie.
Yeah, they were 3 and 2 at the time. In a nutshell, at the age of 13, Carl at the time.
Which is Charlie.
Walked into his parents' bathroom as they were getting ready for bed. His mother, who was 8 months pregnant, was in the tub bathing. And his father was at the sink shaving. And out of the corner of his eye, he notices some movement.
Well, he sees his son holding a pistol. And that's when he shouts out, "No, Charlie, don't."
But Charlie shoots him.
Yeah.
And then turns around and starts shooting his mother. Meanwhile, Angela was in bed. She had just finished watching a program she was going to read. And she hears this commotion. So she's getting out of bed. And here comes Carl into the room. And he points a gun at her. She said she didn't know it was a gun. She didn't know what it was. She knew he was holding something. And then click, click, click. It was out of bullets.
Yeah.
He had fired every bullet that was in the magazine into his parents, basically.
Mm-hmm. And she wrestles with him, struggles with him. She's 15, he's 13, so she might be a little bit bigger than him, but...
Well, what happens is they're struggling, and she manages to get a really good grip on him. She's saying, "Carl, I love you."
Mm-hmm. To calm him down.
And she says that he had this glaze in his eyes, and that the glaze sort of lifted, and then he made a comment like, "What did I do?" So now I think she realizes, okay... crisis averted, at least with me. And then Carl says, "Promise me that you'll never leave me." And
she promises.
Yeah, she promises, because look at the situation she's in. And as soon as they let each other go, she splits. She's gone.
She runs out the front door to the neighbor's house and pounds on their door. Apparently, they don't answer the door fast enough, so then she runs across the street to another house. Meanwhile, Carl taps on the door that she is just pounded on. So when the neighbor goes to open the door, she hears a regular knock, and there stands Carl. And he says, "I just shot my parents."
Well, I believe the reason why Angela didn't stay at that one house is because she saw Carl coming.
Yeah.
So the girl who answers the door, she's a 16-year-old. Carl's just admitting what he did.
Yeah.
Now, because of his age, he's 13 at the time, Carl is sent to jail, but they have to convene a grand jury to decide what to do with him because this is not an easy circumstance. You know, I mean, if he was 20, this wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah. Or if he picked up the gun and accidentally shot one of his parents, but this was an intentional murder and he was trying to murder apparently everybody in the house, but he only was able to kill his parents or at least his mother and injure his father before he ran out of bullets.
Right. So this story, where we're starting from, is there's a 13-year-old boy who attempts to murder his family, essentially.
Yeah.
So we know this has happened before. Children do kill. And I know some people would be surprised by this, trust me, because we have received emails from people that say, children do not murder. It sounds shocking, but yeah, they do, and they have.
And we also receive emails from people saying any child that murders needs to be put away for the rest of their life, which, again, that's going to be a question that we need to bring up later.
And I'm sure that anybody listening right now can understand just how horrific this must be for the survivors, for Angela, for her father, knowing that the wife, the mother in the family, has been murdered by her own son. And anybody that knew him said that he was a mama's boy, mm-hmm. that he was very close with his mother. So right there, we have some sort of, I don't know if it would be a break or if this was some sort of darkness that he had in him that he just kind of hid. It just came out all of a sudden.
Yeah,
we don't really know what prompted this at all.
Whether it be an impulse control problem or if it's a lack of understanding or what. So he's sitting in probably some kind of juvenile detention center for 4 months while they convene and try to decide what they need to do. And the grand jury decides that he needs psychiatric help, right? So they determine he needs to go to a hospital for psychiatric help.
Right. And so by the time this happens, he's been in jail for 4 months, and now they're going to take him to Indianapolis Mental Hospital.
While he was in jail, they actually let him out to attend his mother's funeral, shackled, which I thought was sort of a gloomy image of your son that's murdered your mother at the funeral. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how to handle that. Because on one hand, he's responsible for her death and the unborn child's death. Yet he's only 13. So we already have that question in the air. What do you do with a 13-year-old who does something like this? Would it have been fair for them to say, look what you did. We can't let you go to the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he goes to the funeral. That's got to be a really tough situation. I cannot honestly sit here and say, if I try to put myself in that position, what I would think if I was his brother or his father. I don't know. I don't know what I would think.
Yeah.
So I'm at a loss for words there.
I am too. But needed to be brought up because they seemed to trust him enough that they would let him out for this.
But he was shackled.
Yeah. Wow.
But I guess what they're trying to say, I mean, even if he's responsible, he's still her son and has a right to go to the funeral, I suppose.
Yeah. So his father, Herbert, he is having to drive to see his son in this hospital. And it's
I guess it's a long drive. And so this goes on for a year. And once he's released from the hospital, the father takes the whole family and they move to Florida. And his father takes a leave of absence from work for a year at that point and spends time with the family. And I guess they used to vacation down next to like Daytona Beach or something. So that's where he takes the entire family. And from there, I'm just going to refer to him as Charlie instead of Carl from here on out. He has girlfriends. He does good in school, right? He's kind of a normal kid. He's actually a little bit more outgoing at this point.
And he's a very good student.
Yeah. So what was his grades? Like, how did he do? I know his sister, Angela, was a good student until this incident. And then she flunked out and ended up dropping out of school and getting her GED later. So this was very impactful on Angela. But what happened with Charlie?
Well, his father ends up remarrying and then moving back to Indiana with the two youngest, Jessica and Melanie. Charlie, though, his grandparents, who are from Germany, just like his parents were, his grandparents come into Florida and they live together. So as you said, he's dating and has friends. One of his friends is Jim Graves. So after a while...
And Jim was dating Angela, correct?
Yes. They actually were married. Mm-hmm. So his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Now, by this time, Charlie, you know, he's done well education-wise and has a good job. He's a radar specialist. He and Jim they're actually fairly good friends. Mm-hmm. And at some point, Charlie will ask him, hey, do you know anybody that might want to, you know, hang out with us, hang out with me?
Introduce me to a
woman.
Yeah.
And Jim knows somebody. So he brings into Charlie's life a woman named Teresa, who everyone knows as Terry. And for some reason, this isn't a typical girlfriend for Charlie. Charlie's actually really interested in her, especially after they hang out. Now he's really focusing in on her. And even Jim is surprised by how quickly Charlie is getting attached to her.
Charlie says, this is the woman I want to marry. So they get married and they're together. His friend ends up leaving Angela. But while they're married, Jim says that he asks if they're going to have children. And Terry says, well, considering everything, it might not be a good idea. But they never talk about considering everything. What is everything? And Jim always referred to it as it or the incident, but they never talked about it. So it was a little unclear whether or not Charlie told Terry about what had happened in his past.
Well, this comes up because both Jim and Angela had tried to talk to Charlie about telling his wife what happened when he was 13. Maybe this is something she ought to know.
Yeah.
This is a huge change, getting married, and it's a big investment. So shouldn't she have this information? But that's the odd thing is Charlie sort of says, I'll tell her.
But they get married. Angela doesn't tell her. Jim doesn't tell her. Charlie's father doesn't tell her because none of them want to really get involved with that conversation. So she's marrying somebody without any idea that this person has tried to murder their entire family when they're a child.
There are some questions here. According to Jim, he thinks she does know because she says considering everything.
Yeah.
But what does that really mean? There's nothing specific there. And he tried to tell Jim, okay, I'll tell her, because Jim had actually threatened to tell her.
If he didn't.
Right. So, but here's the question. You go back to he was 13 at the time. Are we really going to hold this against him when he did his time in jail and did his time in the mental hospital?
Yeah. And does he have any duty to tell her? There's no law that says he has to say anything.
Well, apart from the law, then you have the, is this the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And I think that can change from person to person. Some people might look at this and say, he was young then, and we don't know what happened, but He's older now and hasn't done it again.
So
he hasn't killed anybody. This is not the Carl from back then. This is Charlie. He's cool. He's friendly. He's a loyal friend. He'll do anything for you. So why are we going to ruin his life when he's found the right woman? Exactly. This is maybe what he needs to have a successful future.
Exactly. And for somebody that had issues as a child, I'm sure that everyone feels good that he's finally met somebody and is getting married. But it is kind of a point of contention here of, should he tell her? Did he tell her? And if he did tell her, was it years later? Because, you know, if you're with somebody and you're in love, and then they tell you about something they did, even as horrible as it is, that was 30 years ago, 20 to 30 years ago, are you going to just stop loving them and leave them that same day? I don't think most people would do that. I think most people would say, well, I'm in love with you now, and that's in the past, and we're going to move on.
You've made too much of an investment.
Yeah.
So he tells Jim, yes, I'll tell her. He tells his sister, okay, I'll tell her. But that's not proof.
No.
We have Charlie's word that he's told her. But she doesn't tell anyone directly.
She doesn't.
Yes, I know about this incident that happened back when he was 13.
Yeah, if she knows, she doesn't share it with anybody, especially her own family. And either if she does know, she doesn't tell them because she's afraid they're going to judge her, or she doesn't really know the full ramification of it. But according to her family, Terry was somebody that couldn't keep a secret. So anything that's on her mind, she talks about it. I'm kind of that sort of person. I can't keep a secret very well, so I sort of get that.
She and Charlie get married in 1986, and they invite no one to their wedding except for Jim Graves is the best man at the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone else invited? I'm not even, you know, when I was reading on this, it seemed like no family were invited at all, but they had a best man there.
Yeah.
I know that much. So really, they kept it very low key.
They kind of kept their family separated in a sense.
That is odd to me. And I wonder if it's because Charlie didn't want anyone there. If you remember, people were telling him, you should tell someone.
Yeah.
Now, sure enough, Jim's there, but maybe he told Jim, he told her. And if you watch Jim in his interviews, he seems like a guy who's not going to pry too much. He seems very respectful. They say, hey, I told somebody this. He's going to take him at their word.
Yeah.
That's the way Jim struck me. Did you get that feeling?
No, he's just a real normal, down-to-earth kind of guy.
So they're married, and anybody who has been asked about the marriage between Charlie and Terry say, wow, these two are a perfect fit.
Yeah. They say they get along very well. They don't fight. So no problems. Terry even keeps a diary or a journal of things. And for the most part, 99% of the entries are all good, all normal. And it was kind of a calendar diary, so she just talk about miscellaneous stuff during the day. She did write in a few things where she would write weird day, or Charlie stayed out all night, or Charlie stayed out until 3 a.m. But he would fish, and he would go out and drink with his buddy, and he would do a lot of fishing. So fishing does take place at weird hours sometimes, so it doesn't mean that much when you just read it at face value.
They always did things together. So even though he might have stayed out late once in a while, for the most part, when they would go out, they'd go out together. They would do things together. They were a very involved couple. And if you read up on this case, the one thing you'll see everywhere is that they made each other's lunches every day because lunch tasted better when the person you love made it for you.
That's true.
So they had their own little routine that they followed.
Yeah.
And it was special. It was their thing.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So,
no issues.
On the surface, this is great, right?
No red flags.
A rough childhood, but then seemingly coming out the other side, everything looks great.
Yeah.
Fast forward, he's doing well. They're living in Florida, but they happen to live in an area that's going to be hit by Hurricane Ivan.
Or any hurricane, really, that comes through Florida, but they live in like the Keys, so yeah.
And in September 2004, residents in that area were told, you need to get out, you know, be safe, get out of there. And Charlie didn't really want to leave. He had actually cut boards and put them up in the windows. And they said that he was like an engineer. He could cut those boards and they would fit perfectly into the spaces that he put them in.
Yeah, he was meticulous. And his boarded up house was probably the most spectacular boarded up house you'd ever see, because it wasn't just like boards just hammered on willy-nilly. Like, it wouldn't be what I would do.
It wouldn't be what you'd see in Night of the Living Dead.
No.
Where they're trying to board up the doors.
Yeah, that would be what I would do.
Right. I would probably hammer my finger.
Yeah.
You know.
This guy, everything was precision cut.
Terry has a niece, and her name is Michelle Jones, and she lives near Orlando, who was 37, and a successful executive with the Golf Channel.
Yeah.
She was doing well for herself, but she's saying, come out and stay with me.
Yeah, because it's like 400 miles. It's a long way away from where Ivan's going to hit, and it rains every day in Florida anyway, so you know, by the time it makes landfall, it's just a thunderstorm at that point and no longer a hurricane.
Yeah, Terry is Michelle's mother's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So it's her aunt, and she loves her. So they end up going over to Michelle's house. When they get there, Michelle calls her mom and says, where the heck are you? Because Charlie and Terry are here.
She calls her friends, too. She's like inviting people over to hang out.
Right. And for some reason, none of them come over.
Yeah. And then the next day, because they spend the night, because that's the night that Ivan's hitting, her friend responds and says, hey, I can come over today. And she says, actually, maybe you shouldn't come over, because Charlie and Terry are kind of not getting along at the moment and drinking a lot. So it might not be the best scene here. Now, Ivan's cleared, so Charlie and Terry can go back home, but Charlie doesn't want to. And for whatever reason, they talk their way into one more night, and she lets them stay.
And then it's like a blackout. No one can reach her. And they say that's really odd, because Michelle's really good about getting back to people. If they call and she misses their call, she gets back to them fairly quickly. When you have a day or two goes by and there's no answer from Michelle, now Michelle's mother calls one of Michelle's best friends and says, can you please go to the house and check and see what's going on? Michelle's mom stays on the phone as she goes up the driveway to go check on the house. This friend has a key, but she can't get it to work. And I'll tell you a story. I mean, just the other day, I tried entering my house through the garage, and I was trying to use my key because I forgot something when I was leaving, and I'd locked the door. I could not get that key to work for well over a minute or two. It was so weird. I could not get it to work.
And with in Florida, with all the moisture in the air and everything, doors swell, just things happen. So she couldn't get the door open.
Well, I couldn't even get it in the lock.
I know, but you don't have moisture here.
But here's the thing. When the police come and they try that key, it works no problem. Mm-hmm. And here's the good news with that is that she didn't go into the house and see what had happened inside the house.
But the reason why she called the police is she couldn't make it through the front door. So she walked over to the garage, and the door to the garage, not the garage door, but just the regular door, is a glass door. And she saw Charlie hanging by a bed sheet from one of the rafters in the garage. So she knew something was up. There's a bad scene, calls the police. That's when they discover what has happened here.
It was so bad that when they sent three officers in, they weren't in there even more than 30 to 40 seconds before they had run back out, and one of them was losing his lunch. Inside the house, they discover Terry on a couch.
Wearing only a t-shirt.
Has been stabbed 7 times in the chest. Now, at the time, they don't know it's 7 times. They just know that she's been stabbed.
Yeah.
And then from there, they go into Michelle's bedroom, and they find her in there. And this is where it gets a little graphic.
But we have to tell you the graphic part here. It doesn't work if we don't. So she's decapitated. The head has been cut off and set next to her body. Her breasts have been removed, and they're set on the bed. And her heart has been removed, and it's on the bed.
And her left leg has been taken off. This is like Jack the Ripper. I'm reminded of the Ripper case because he would take people apart just about, and with a knife. And here, and it seems obvious to the police when they enter, because you have Charlie hanging in the garage and you have these two women murdered and all the doors are locked.
No sign of struggle. They don't even think really that anyone else could have done this. They think it's Charlie and it was a murder-suicide.
They still have to do an investigation, but it's just, it seems really obvious from the start that they're dealing with a murder-suicide. Charlie, to pretty much everyone that knows him, is perhaps a little quiet, but he's a loyal friend. He'll do anything for you. And he has this great relationship, supposedly, with Terry. And here it is. It looks like he's murdered his wife and then done horrible things to her niece. But why was she a target? And this is where we say, so this great guy committed these horrible murders, but why? I mean, what, do we not know this person?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is his wife Terry got 7 stab wounds to the chest, and Michelle did have 1 stab wound, but then she's been totally dismembered. So she's really the target or the focus here, and not Terry, his wife. So you almost get the feeling that he dispatched of Terry so he could go do this to Michelle. That's kind of the impression I got.
Yeah, and the fact that she was just wearing a t-shirt, maybe he was becoming romantic with her and then got her where she was just completely unaware of what was about to happen. The weapons that he used were kitchen knives.
Yeah, used from the kitchen. They also note that the heart has been removed in a very, not surgical manner like a surgeon did it, but unlike Jack the Ripper who rips, this was kind of neatly removed. So weird.
Scattered around in the bedroom, he had taken her bras and panties, Victoria's Secret bras and panties, and cut through them with the knife. He also, when he had been done with all this, had removed his own clothes and changed his clothes.
Mm-hmm. So again, it sort of appears to be a crime of passion, a crime of sexual hatred almost. I won't even try to profile this because it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but the panties being chopped up just sort of suggests that.
An investigation begins, and one of the really creepy things we find out was that he may have had something like an interest or even possibly an obsession with Michelle.
The niece.
Right, because he told a coworker that her name was Victoria's Secret.
Yeah. And he had a subscription to the Victoria's Secret's lingerie catalog. And we find out later that he browsed some very weird and inappropriate type pornography on the internet too. Things like dead girl autopsies and things that more or less were portrayals of women being dismembered, murdered, raped, those kind of things.
We started off the episode by telling you that as a 13-year-old, he attempted to murder his family. And now in 2004, which is 33 years later, he's now murdered his wife and her niece. This is not someone who got better. This isn't someone who snapped. When you look at the 71 incident from 2004 and later, that 71 incident now looks like, holy shit.
That was the warning shot.
Remember, you and I were talking about this, but you gave a name that just really struck a chord with me because I started seeing the film in my head.
One of my favorite films growing up was Halloween with Michael Myers. If you haven't seen the Halloween movie, Michael as a child kills his sister because he's apparently in this mode, this glossy-eyed phase. And then later on in life, he becomes Michael Myers, the murderous force that we know of. And not only did Charlie kill when he was a child, but there's a scene in the movie where he's chasing Jamie Lee Curtis down the street and she's banging on doors. And it's just, I know that Halloween was not based off this, but it made me think. I mean, art imitates life and life imitates art. So yeah, it just dawned on me. I'm like, is this the story of Michael Myers when we were researching this? And people even say that he's not the most talkative guy and he's a little socially awkward, but not to the point where they're scared of him or anything.
He would capture a bug in the house and release it outside.
Well, I think of Psycho, you know, Norman Bates, I Won't Kill the Fly. Very interesting comparisons there. So the investigators of this crime, they're trying to figure this out. They pretty much know that Charlie did it, and they're trying to figure out a motive here. And all they really have to go off of is the crime scene. So they're trying to put it together. But then Angela, the older sister, talks to the police, and she informs them of Charlie's past because Terry's family has no idea why this would happen. So we know that she didn't share any of this information. Otherwise, that would probably be the first point they would bring up. But Angela shows up and says, I grew up my entire life being afraid of my brother. I never let him know where I was. I would not even run the air conditioner at my home because I had to listen to hear if he was coming. So ever since the incident when she was 15 years old, she's been scared to death of him and she knew that something was wrong with him. Even though their father pretty much forced the family to welcome him back into the family, she knew something was up. So she gives the police something to go on.
Yeah, but I mean, before she says anything, all they have to go on is, it seems obvious that he did it. They end up finding out about the weird websites. They end up seeing that he has an anatomy poster on the back of his bedroom door.
This is a weird
poster. I guess that would be on the inside of the bedroom door.
Yeah, it's almost like a full length door poster of a woman who it's very scientific, but it's disconcerting because she's kind of cut in half. So you have her skeleton on one half, and then you have her layers of her muscle and other things on the other half. But she has like a hair bun. It's just, it's a weird poster to have on the back of your door, unless you're, say, a doctor or a med student or somehow involved with that industry. But he's not. And he's been married to his wife for however long, I think 18 years. And this, we don't know how long the poster was on the back of the bedroom door, but I'm sure it wasn't there for a day. I'm sure it was there for a large portion of their marriage. And I don't know why Terry would like to look at this, or maybe she just never closed the door and never saw it. I don't know. Why would somebody have that?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about what we think happened, but it would all be speculation. I mean, I could almost imagine that she said, "Why is this here?" And maybe he got upset about it and defensive, and she thought, eh, "This is not worth fighting over because we get along so well. Why start a fight?"
Which totally happens. I don't like that my wife doesn't squeeze the toothpaste from the bottom of the tube. I'm not going to pick a fight over it. If he wants a weird medical poster on the back of the door, then, you know, he's got his medical poster on the back of the door. But in retrospect, I think it's odd.
Well, I think it's telling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also had medical journals and books. And one of the books had a bookmark, which was pretty much a human heart, like the anatomically correct heart, that was a bookmark, and it showed all the compartments and chambers of the heart and valves and stuff.
So Charlie has dark secrets inside of him, obviously. There are things that he doesn't let people know about. And so now we kind of have to bring 71 and 2004 together, because we need to try and figure out why he did this. What is his motivation? In 1971, after the death of his mother, he is questioned by the police. And they ask him, "Why did you get the gun?" And his response is, "It's sort of like I was programmed or something just inside of me. I was just forced to do it." And he really can't say. He starts talking about being stressed about school and things like that. But there's no good answer. And no. When the psychiatrists take a look at him, they can't put him in a category.
No, they're looking for a mental illness. They're trying to diagnose him with schizophrenia or multiple personality disorder or just something like that. And they can't. He doesn't have any of those symptoms, any of those traits. They know that there's something wrong, but they can't put their finger on it.
And of course, back then when they release him, the family reports and other people report, you know, he seems like he's doing great. He became more social.
Yeah.
He was involved in more things, just seemed to have improved. And after these murders in 2004, they're talking with people that knew him. And his friend Jim says that after he had a falling out with Angela, I believe it was, they had a weird conversation, and Charlie said to him, "If you really wanted to get revenge, you cut their heart out and you eat it."
It's weird, but I not to try to justify his comment, but guys, they get hurt. You know, there's bad breakups, and they're like, "Oh, screw her," blah blah blah, and they have conversations like that. But cutting out people's hearts, I guess it would be like, "Oh, she cut my heart out." Like, I almost took it as just a descriptive thing, but I almost took the shooting of his parents as an impulse thing until you hear that he goes on to try to shoot his sister. And then when you hear he said, "Cut her heart out," like, now it's...
Is this connected is the question?
Yeah.
Because you could easily make an offhand remark that isn't connected to something that is you.
Yeah.
But this seems very specific. So he's saying, if you really want to get revenge, if you truly want revenge, this is what you do. Is that what this is about? I mean, why would he need to get revenge on Michelle? Is that because he knew he just couldn't have her?
Something to that effect.
And I really wonder, everyone keeps saying that both Terry and Michelle are the kind of women that would not put up with anything crazy like this.
Yeah.
In other words, if Charlie had said to Michelle, I'm calling you Victoria's Secret, she would have probably thrown him out of the house.
Yeah, it wouldn't have flown and Charlie would have been...
Is it true, though? I'm wondering if maybe he did say something when they were drinking.
Yeah,
and she maybe had said, Aunt Charlie, that's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I think she shut him down at some point. I'm trying to put this together in a way that makes sense to me.
Something happened that pushed him to this point during that night. But I wonder if it was more planned, just because they could have gone home that day and he decided he wanted to stay another night when it was totally unnecessary. And Michelle, we can kind of gather, didn't want them to stay another night. I think he planned it in a sense. I don't think it was, he said something, they got into a fight, and then he just did this. I think it was escalated to that point and more planned.
Well, I'm saying if he says this to his friend Jim about how to truly get revenge, I'm not saying something necessarily happened while they were there. I wouldn't doubt if he planned the murders once he was going there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying... at some point, because he'd known her for a while.
Yeah.
As you know, they got married in 86. This is 2004. There's a long stretch of time. Any time in there, she could have rebuffed him or said, that's inappropriate, Charlie. And then it was in his head. If he was obsessing over her and knew he couldn't have her, and he's already a killer, he doesn't have to stand for that. This is something that he can take care of.
Yeah. I have another theory, but we have to cover some other things before I give it.
Right. This is just an early thought that I had when I was reading about this.
No, it makes sense. It does.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So they have interviewed the families now, and Terry's family is not happy that they didn't know. They feel Charlie's family was holding back a secret. And they feel that Terry might not have stayed with Charlie if she had known. But again, apparently her family didn't know, but we don't know if Terry knew or not. Something did happen during their marriage. A woman was murdered in 1989, about four blocks from Charlie's house, on the Big Pine Key Bridge. And she was a woman named Sherry Parisio. And Sherry was 38 years old. She was living on a boat. So that sounds weird, but it's the Florida Keys. People just go down there to just retire, do whatever, and just live a free life. You could think of it as more of a hippie thing, but it's not that weird or out of sorts. So she's living on a boat. Some fishermen are fishing under the bridge, and they catch what they think is a fish, but then they think it's maybe garbage or clothing or something because it's really heavy and it's not moving. And they find that there's a body on the other end of their line. And this body is Sherry, and her head has been removed, and her heart has been cut out. At this same time, Terry walks in on Charlie in the basement and Charlie's got blood all over him. And she thinks, what's going on here? Like, what are you doing, Charlie? And he says, oh, I was flaying fish. And he does fish. He is a fisherman. So she takes his word for it, but her and Jim Graves have a conversation about it. And she actually says to Jim, or Jim at least claims, Terry thinks Charlie might have had something to do with the death of this woman that was found underneath the bridge, because he happened to have blood on him at the same time they found her body. This is all coming from Jim, not exactly substantiated. It wasn't in Terry's journal or diary. It's only Jim saying it. So we just have to go off of his word for it. If you're married to somebody, though, can you really accept such a paradigm shift into your life that your loved one, your husband, or your family member, whatever, is a murderer? I don't know if Terry was willing to accept this, but it seems if Jim's word is true, she might have had an inkling that there was something wrong here. The detectives and investigators in this case bring in other police departments in the area and say, bring us all your unsolved murders, specifically ones where women have been brutalized or dismembered. And they have a meeting, a little summit, where they talk about these things. And they find multiple other women in the area have been murdered and had their heads chopped off and their hearts cut out. It's pretty scary, actually. The second one that I know that they absolutely tied to Charlie was Darlene Toler. And this is 1995 in Miami. The detective, Pat Diaz, found a woman. Her head had been removed. Her heart had been removed. Her body was wrapped up in a blanket. And then the blanket was wrapped up into a tarp. And it had been disregarded off the side of a highway. Well, they found dog hairs within the tarp. And they were able to match those dog hairs to dog hairs found in the back of Charlie's truck.
Well, they attempted to do DNA analysis, and as far as I know, they don't have definitive answer on the DNA, but there's actually some other evidence that points to him being responsible for her murder, which is, we already said how he would precision cut wood to bolster the house for the hurricane. Well, he also kept meticulous logs of his gas usage and his mileage, and he traveled an extra 100 miles. And that would enable him to go to Little Havana and back, which is where she was located.
Mm-hmm. So same MO, similar hair follicles. And he actually logged in his mileage book an additional 100 miles that day.
It seems pretty cut and dried.
Yeah, like it just doesn't seem like that was just a random thing.
And of course, they're searching the databases, and they come across an additional 26 cases they think he could be tied to. The trouble is, these are cold cases, and generally police departments like to work on current cases.
They just don't have the budget sometimes to go back and work on the cold cases. It's just active cases because they want justice for current crimes happening, and that makes sense. I think they tied 6 more murders to him, including these 2 women we just mentioned. But,
well, it would be his mother. It would be his wife, her niece. Then there were the 2 ladies we mentioned. I would say I feel comfortable saying they know of 5.
Yeah.
Now, the truth is that someone with Charlie's MO, which is to mutilate these women, I would say that's an extreme. And I don't know that going and visiting these websites was enough to keep him at bay. And that's one thing I kept hearing that bothered me, was they kept saying, oh, well, now you know where he got some of his ideas from. I don't believe that for one moment. I think that when you go to those websites and you're into it, it's because you're looking for that.
You're looking for an outlet, not information.
Right. He already had that in his head. He just wants to see it play out in front of his eyes. Hence why he was probably out murdering people too when he had the opportunity. So do I think there are more than five victims? Oh, yes. I don't know what the number is.
No. And I don't want them to close an old case, a cold case, and just say, oh, well, these were all related to this one guy. Because if you don't have anything really tying to it, then you might be letting other murderers walk around free. Or it might be some other guy that is currently sitting in jail that you might eventually tie to. So I don't want them to close all these cases just willy-nilly and say, okay, he was responsible for all these things. We've seen other serial killers confess to murders they had not committed. But I absolutely do not think that a 13-year-old that shot his parents had nothing in between for 33 years from shooting his parents to dismembering women. I don't believe that for a second. And he seemed to be pretty proficient at it. So I guess I feel that he was a serial killer and he was obsessed with Michelle. And when he finally had his opportunity with Michelle, he wanted to take it. But of course, you can't kill who you know, people around you, and get away with it as you can with random women that you find in a boat somewhere. So this was going to be his final act if he killed Michelle. And he had to kill his own wife, Terry, to get to her. I feel like it's that climatic opus. That's kind of the buildup that I perceived myself. And the trigger could have been he made an advance, he said something inappropriate, and she rebuffed him. But I feel like this was planned.
Well, Charlie Brandt's life was all about secrets,
mm-hmm.
because it started with his dad keeping secrets. He started keeping the secret of what Charlie did back then with his daughters. He didn't tell Jessica and Melanie what Charlie had done.
So Charlie's own family didn't know he had shot his parents.
Well, Angela knew.
Because she was almost murdered.
And I'm pretty sure, from what I understand, that everyone that Herbert married, because he had two more wives after that, his second wife died, then he married a third wife, they knew, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But no one said anything. So all of the new people that came along were pretty much shielded from the truth, other than Jim Graves and Angela. And by keeping these secrets, because, well, it's not really my business. Oh, he was 13. You have to give him a chance. Oh, look, he had therapy. He's better now. There's a real question here of, by keeping these secrets, did they put people's lives at risk? Because, as we know, Charlie never got better. Charlie stayed Charlie. He stayed a murderer the whole time, it seems like.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is his father listened to these psychologists and people, and they said that we don't really find anything wrong with him. He was in a hospital for a year, and he got out, and is his father capable of understanding the situation? Does he think that Charlie's fine because the doctor said he was fine? Is he not seeking further medical assistance or mental health assistance for him? It doesn't sound like it.
Well, I don't think anyone said he was fine. I think they just hit a wall with, well, we don't know what else to do. We don't see any problems with him. He doesn't seem to have any mental illness. So do we just hold him indefinitely for what?
Yeah. You can't. They said that he was too young to be, you know, held criminally responsible. So
our system is, I guess you could say, it's sort of a blunt tool. It's never precise. And when you have cases like this where you have a 13-year-old who's a murderer, the system's really not designed for that. I know we've had cases since then where younger people have been held criminally responsible, but in 1971, you can't protect everyone all the time. And legally, they sort of have to give the benefit of the doubt to this young boy because they don't understand the pressures. A pressure's on a 13-year-old, you can remember back when you're 13 or 14 and you start dating. I mean, the way you look at the world is totally different than when you're 33.
Yeah.
So there are so many factors at work here. We can't even begin to understand what's going on. We have the benefit of, we can look back over what Charlie has done over his life and realize that he was a serial killer. And they just weren't prepared to deal with him.
Yeah, you can connect the dots fairly easily in hindsight, but it's not something that we're willing to accept when we're faced with it. And I would say that a situation like this is so rare. I mean, you'd be better off buying a lotto ticket than actually facing down a man that you suspect is a serial killer. I know we all do. We all think that guy that checked us out at the grocery store was a little too creepy and, you know, kept eye contact a little too long, so he has to be a serial killer. But the chances of it actually being true are pretty slim. So I understand why, if his father or his wife might have saw red flags, they might not accept them as easily as what we think they should have done.
I think the closer you are to something, the less you may understand it. We all know the story about the three blind men touching an elephant, and they each have their own impression of it. Mm-hmm. And if you're Charlie's wife or you're Charlie's dad, maybe you're not objective enough to know what's going on because you have your own biases. You have your own experiences with Charlie. And if you think about it, Terry and Charlie had supposedly a great life together. And Charlie kept in touch with his dad. There are no flags there. So there's nothing really to warn them despite that one incident. And that's where that incident maybe perhaps should have carried more weight. But again, you throw in the factor of the age and now you're making a choice. And as we know in life, you can make a choice, but you don't always make the right one. And in this case, I don't know what the right one should have been because when they tried looking into Charlie, they couldn't find an answer. So they gave it a good go, but they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. There's no diagnosis. They have to let him go, and he's able to go on and kill again.
Terry's family was not happy about this, and they felt that they were wronged by Charlie's father and sister. And they went campaigning to pass a law called Michelle Lynn's Law, which was pretty much like a sex offender registry, but it's a violent offender registry. So anyone that's committed a murder at any age, they're registered, and that crime is in a database for anyone to look up. So they feel that if Terry or anyone could have seen Charlie had murdered his mother and tried to kill his father at 13, they could have looked that up. But again, would that have discouraged anybody, especially if she found out after the fact, after they got married?
Well, who's looking up this database?
Yeah.
I know in a business, you might say, well, let's do a background check on Justin. Yeah. When you're getting married to someone, do you do background checks on them?
No. And also, a background check only goes back to when you're 18. I've been arrested a few times before I turned 18 for trespassing and other things. You're not going to find any of that on my record because when I turned 18, it was all expunged because I was a minor at the time. But I didn't kill anybody. So I understand their idea for this law. I understand what they're trying to accomplish, but I don't know how reasonable it is. I don't know what they would accomplish at the end of the day.
I don't know who's going to look it up.
No, exactly.
But I do understand because when something tragic happens, if someone does something horrific to your family like this, you want to be able to say, I did something. This is what I did. That's what this is about.
Yeah. I have all this hurt and hate and energy that I have to send somewhere. So I want to change the world to make it a better place. And that's their goal there. And I get it. I agree with you. Who's going to look it up? Who does background checks? I'm sure that there are a lot of people that are saying right now, oh, I check everyone I go out on a date with, but...
And now we have some couples looking at each other and wondering, did you look me up?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
but
or they're going to do it now.
I'm sure if there's anyone that's in a law enforcement family, they do background checks on every single person their daughter dates or whatever. But you know, it's a mindset in your family. And I will say right now that I have never done a background check of any type on any of the women in my life. So I wanted to do a quick shout out to some podcasts out there. I know that in the true crime genre, just from some of the surveys and stuff we've done, and thank you for filling out our pod survey. We see that at least 80% of our audience are women. And when I go out and check out podcasts, especially true crime ones, I typically find that a lot of dudes are doing them. So I'm like, what's going on with that? So if you want to hear true crime podcasts done by women, here's a list that I would suggest. Right off the bat, there's Once Upon a Crime, there's The Apex and the Abyss, there's Already Gone, The Vanished Podcast, and Insight Podcast. Just a few for anyone to go out and check out. And as always, check out my peripheral podcast. My last episode was about a woman that left her family and church because they were a Jehovah's Witness sect that were a little bit too strict for her. So she gets kicked out at the young age of 15. Check it out.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.